The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
With great mojo comes great responsibility. Mojo 5-0. Mojo 5-0.
We will make America great again.
Sam Sorbo.
Hi there, Sam Sorbo here for the Sam Sorbo Show. Thanks so much for joining me. My guest now is Nick Searcy. I believe he used to call himself the best known unknown actor in Hollywood or something like that, but he's a veteran actor. He's been in a ton of things. You probably know him from either The Shape of Water or the multiple Oscar winning film Three Billboards Out of Ebbing, Missouri. He's in Moneyball, Castaway, Fried Green Tomatoes, Runaway Jury. Just the list goes on and on. He's also a director, and he directed one of my favorite movies, Gosnell, which is a movie that my husband and I actually fundraised for. And I was so thrilled to see how well it turned out and how brilliantly, frankly, it told the story of Gosnell. And if you haven't seen that film, I highly recommend it. But Nick is here to talk about his newest film, Capital Punishment, which is a documentary that focuses on the January 6th events. Welcome to the show, Nick Searcy.
Thanks, Sam. Good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. So, I mean, you've gotten into directing. You've been directing for a while. Capital Punishment isn't your first documentary, right?
No, we made a documentary in 2020 called God Shed His Grace on Thee, which is a movie about the Bible and the Constitution and the relationship between God and America, basically. And that in some ways led to this one. I don't know that I could have done the job that we did on this one if I hadn't directed, produced the other documentary first. So.
Right. Oh, so you produced the other one, you didn't direct it, but this one you directed, right?
No, I produced them both. Chris Burgard directed both of them, but you know, it's sort of like, it's one of those things where we kind of had to like, what title are you going to take? You know, cause we both did both things.
That's
you know?
Right. Okay. So you're co-producing and so tell me about this documentary. First of all, why?
Well, I went to Washington on January 6th and, you know, I didn't go there with the idea of making a film. I just went because I wanted to be there, and I shot some iPhone video and just sort of like a tourist, you know. And after I got home that night, I didn't see anything on the news that matched my experience. I saw people there that were praying and saying the Pledge of Allegiance and singing hymns and praying for the country. And, you know, and none of that was shown on television. All you saw was like the small amount of violence that took place. And so that just sort of made me curious. And that was the germ of the idea. It's like, why is the media not telling you the whole story? So that's why.
Actually, you planned to make this documentary long before the investigation and all of the other fallout from that event. Is that, would you say?
Well, we started making the documentary in April after we kind of thought about it for a few months. And then originally the idea, I thought this was a free speech issue. The original title of the movie was The Trouble with Free Speech, because I saw what the government was doing as an attempt to suppress free speech. But as we got into it, more and more, we were talking to people who their homes had been broken into by the FBI and their children handcuffed, and just the sort of terrorization that the FBI was using against these people that had never been arrested for anything before in their lives. And in the most cases in our movie, never went inside the building, never did anything violent. And they're being charged, facing 62 years in some cases, and just just a horrible way these people have been treated. And so that's why it evolved into a movie called Capital Punishment, because I see this as the government punishing people who dare disagree with the government.
Right. And you spell capital the wrong way.
Right. Like the Capitol building, right, rather than, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a clever little pun. That was my idea.
Yes, you're good with the puns. So yeah. The movie is, in some respects, it's hard to watch, but in other respects, it's quite uplifting. So walk us through sort of what the upshot of what you hope people take away, I guess, is the best way to put it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to, I guess what I want people to take away from it is to not be afraid, because that's what the government is trying to do. They're trying to make people afraid to speak up. They're trying to make people afraid to stand beside these people that are being charged. I mean, so even Republican congressmen and senators, people that are supposed to be on their side, are kind of afraid to stick up for them in many cases. And I think that's our only way forward. And it's also rather freeing to do that, to stand up and say what you believe, even if you might pay some price for it. And that's the message I want to get out, is just stop letting the bullies make you afraid.
Right. If I think the phrase is, if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Right. Right. And I think that is that's the key. I mean, we have to stand up to them. I'm not talking about physical force. I'm just talking about, we have to stand up and say what we believe to be true, or they will just run all over us, as they're doing to a lot of these people.
Yeah, and it's still ongoing, right? I mean, I'm still hearing about people who are in the prison there, and yeah, they're not getting their fair say, not getting their day in court, so to speak. Everything's postponed. They're losing businesses. They're losing their income, their livelihoods. What happened?
You know, one of the really insidious things that's going on is a lot of these people, and I would say a majority of these people that are in jail, that are facing these charges, these are not people that have $150,000, $200,000 laying around that they can spend on a vigorous defense. They, in many cases, they have these court-appointed attorneys that are not really working for their clients. The court-appointed attorneys are working for the government. They're trying to get these people to plead guilty to a felony or something, get a plea deal, saying to them, you're facing 28 years if you just take this one plea deal for one little felony. You know, you'll do about 6 months, but you'll be a convicted felon and you won't be able to vote or own a firearm. And so they're basically trying to neutralize all these people, make them unable to vote again. And since they don't have the money to go out and buy a really good attorney, they're kind of trapped in a way. And it's really, really disturbing to realize that this is the way the government is operating. And it doesn't feel like America. When you watch the movie, you really can't believe that it's happening in our country.
So more than just standing up for your beliefs, you really want... Is there a call to action? Is there something that people can do?
Well, you know, I think one of the things we talk about in the movie is that there has not been, for example, Kamala Harris, like, starting a fund to bail out BLM protesters and that sort of thing. There's not been a conservative fund that's been started to help these people with their legal troubles, you know, and that's what I go back to. There's so many people on our side that are afraid to stand with these people and say, you know, these people are being treated badly. This is wrong. So I would hope that there would be a group of conservatives that would be willing to put up some money to help these people with their legal troubles.
Has somebody started some kind of GoFundMe or something? I mean, I dare say GoFundMe wouldn't host it, and neither would Kickstarter. So how do you get that done? And then how do you make sure that the money goes to the right place? I mean, Kyle Rittenhouse came out and in his interview, he implicated Lynn Wood and another lawyer and said they weren't actually trying to help me. They were just trying to make money or something.
Yeah, we are exploring, some way to do that with taking part of the proceeds from the movie and giving it to the to that kind of a fund. I believe that Matt and Mercedes Schlapp started a fund for the 1-6 defendants. But other than them, I don't know of another one.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me, you know, you're launching the movie. It starts. Is it launching next week?
No, it's already out. It's it released on Thanksgiving Day, and it's out for 2 weeks exclusively at CapitalPunishmentTheMovie.com.
And okay, so that's like a pay-per-view kind of a deal?
Right, right. And then after, I think next Friday, it expands to a couple of other platforms. His Glory TV is going to launch it on December 10th.
Oh, that's where I got confused. Yeah, because I work with His Glory, so
they're going to launch it on their platform on the 10th. And basic, I think we did it this way, to control the way that it's presented, because we thought we would, you know, we knew there was a danger we would be shut down, and so this way, you know, we control the website and the servers, and so they can't really knock us off. And it's also a new way to release movies, just to sort of going directly to the audience with it rather than trying to run it through the Hollywood gatekeepers.
Well, absolutely. And now everybody has their big screen TV because COVID, right?
So
they're much more, you know, accustomed to streaming their entertainment. And so there are some really wonderful moments in the movie too that, you know, I mean, I look at it as, it's hard to watch because it implicates the nation that I love. And yet, you know, we have to be cognizant that these things are happening, that this is real, and that there are enemies of the United States that are serving in the halls of Congress.
Yeah.
You know, for Kamala to start a fund to support BLM when they were terrorizing neighborhoods over last summer, you know, or the summer before, I guess, it's outrageous.
Mm-hmm. You know? And we compare in the movie the actual riots, the summer riots of 2020 and 2021, you know, to what they're claiming all these Trump supporters did. And, it, you know, the
you actually difference. Have footage in the movie of the police officer inviting people in and people asking, is it okay if we do this? And him saying, yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah. The two twin sisters who went to Washington on January 6th, 74-year-old grandmothers, two twin sisters, asked permission to go in. Capitol Police said, come on in. They took a few selfies and walked right back out. Police were standing right there. And 3 weeks later, the FBI is banging on their door. You know, it's insane. It really is. It doesn't make any sense.
And the problem is, it's sort of like, well, go to the videotape. Oh, no, we don't trust the video or what have you. You know what I mean? Like we've gotten to the point where we just have our own narrative, and that's what we're going to run with.
Yeah, and that's the narrative is everything to them. I mean, to the left. And the facts don't matter. They never have. And so they're going to push this as far as they can, because what the real intention here is to terrorize people into never standing up for what they believe in if it goes against the government. That's what they're trying to do. Make it so painful and make it so visibly painful that people just go, I'm not going to get involved in that. You know?
And it's highly effective.
Yeah. Well, then even in our case, we talked to a lot of people who wouldn't go on screen. And in one case, we actually did a whole interview with someone who then called us back later and said, don't do this. Don't tell my story. I can't risk it. You know, so they are being successful in silencing and demonizing and terrorizing people like us.
Well, I mean, we're living in a fear state right now with COVID and new variants coming every other week. And, you know, but if you look at the statistics, the statistics don't support, even from the government websites, don't support the actions of the government. So when are people going to start to stand up and say, no, you won't do this to me. You're not justified.
Well, I think it's important to let people know this is going on. I mean, I know for myself, I was shocked talking to these people. You know, I couldn't believe it was happening. So I think in that way, I mean, I think the movie Capital Punishment is important. I think people need to know. I mean, I just want to know, whatever side of the fence you're on, I want you to look at this movie and see these people that are having their lives destroyed by the government, and just tell me, do you think this is appropriate? Do you think this is the way Americans should be treated? No matter what they think, no matter what they believe. You know,
you humanize the victim.
Yeah.
So that at least people can start to sympathize and not be so inhumane, I suppose. So yeah. Nick Searcy is a very accomplished actor. How is this movie being received in Hollywood, and what do you suppose? I mean, you've managed to weather the storm as a conservative in Hollywood for quite a while.
Yeah.
Is this going to change anything, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, I kind of, I look at it like I've done a lot of work, and I'm going to be okay either way. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, you know, has this hurt my career? It's like, I don't know. In many ways, it might have helped it. You know, I just got through doing the Daily Wires movie with Gina Carano. And, you know, in some ways, by standing up, it's sort of maybe made some people not want to work with me, but it's made others want to work with me. And, you know, Kevin, so your husband has done kind of the same thing. I mean, he's found a way to make films that he cares about, that he has a passion for outside of Hollywood. And, you know, I looked at that as an example of the things I want to do. I'm kind of reached a point in my life where I don't want to just keep doing, you know, some little role in some movie that I won't even tell anybody to go see. You know, I want to do things that I believe in. So,
yeah, I like that. It occurred to me the other day, and I haven't finished thinking about this yet, but it occurred to me that it's more dangerous to come out from a religious perspective, from a Christian perspective, than it is to come out politically. What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think that's, I think they're both dangerous. I think the Christian perspective is especially being targeted and demonized by the left, because that's the first thing the left has to get rid of, is any belief in a higher power, any belief in anything over the state. That's their whole philosophy. And so, yeah, they do come after Christians harder than just conservatives who aren't Christians, I believe, because they have to stamp that out. If your allegiance is to God, you're not going to be susceptible to fear as much as, you know, your common run-of-the-mill leftist. You're not going to be afraid of COVID. You're not going to be afraid of the government because you answer to someone higher. You answer to Christ.
Well, that's very well said. I think that sort of sums it up. And I had just gotten that inkling the other day, and I thought, okay, I want to sit and think about that. But you managed to just go right to the core. And I think,
well, I mean, a lot of these people we talk to, most of them are Christians, you know, very, very open, committed, you know, Christians, work security at their churches. It's a part of their lives, you know, and it's interesting how many people go after that. And they never show you that on any coverage of the January 6th event. They never show you how many people were there praying for the country. And literally how many people were there. There were over a million there. So
yeah, you're right. Literally how many people were there, how many people were there in support of the nation, what they focused on, what they concocted was that there was some sort of insurrection attempt at the Capitol, which is absurd because what's funny to me is the best armed populace of the United States showed up at the Capitol to overthrow the government, but they didn't bring their arms.
Right. Yeah. You know, I mean,
at some point the narrative just completely breaks down. And
I know. And I make the joke in the film, and most of the people that were there, my age or older, what were we armed with? Like blood pressure medicine and polygraph. You know, I don't know. It's like, if I was going to overthrow a government, I wouldn't want to do it with these old people, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. All right. So, Nick Searcy, thank you so much for coming on. The name of the movie is Capital Punishment. Give people the name of the website where they can see it, and then maybe where they'll be able to see it on a wider platforms or the, you know, further platforms later.
Yeah, it's at capitalpunishmentthemovie.com exclusively right now. And please, everybody, if you share it, you know, share it with people. We're kind of being suppressed as much as possible by social media and Facebook. They won't take any of our ads. So everybody, you know, spread the word, pass it along.
Do you know?
Capitalpunishmentthemovie.com.
Nick, I was invited to speak at a homeschool conference that this gal is throwing together. God bless her.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook said this is not acceptable content.
Yeah. And well,
me, my face, like I'm not acceptable. Right. It's a badge of honor. Yeah. I take it. But still, yeah. Really? Because I'm not allowed to talk about homeschooling? What?
Well, it's getting worse. I mean, they are getting away with it. So they're going to continue to do it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And that so-called whistleblower. No, sorry. Nobody's buying that story.
No. And well, speaking of school boards, you know, the FBI busted down a lady's door about 2 weeks ago who was going to school board meetings, you know, because she was designated as some sort of a terrorist because she was going to multiple school board meetings and talking about the same things. They used the same tactics against her that they used against the, you know, quote unquote, insurrectionists in my movie. So,
but not against the BLM terrorists.
No. The BLM terrorists, the Antifa terrorists, they're giving the government the chaos that they need in order to exert more control and power
to justify what they're doing now to patriots. It's really outrageous. Yeah. It's outrageous. Nick Searcy, thanks so much for coming on. The website is capitalpunishmentthemovie.com. Do share it. Share it with all your friends. Oh, by the way, are you going to do DVDs at some point?
Yes, there's an option on the website now.
So Christmas gifts for your liberal best friends and your liberal relatives. Go buy the DVD Christmas gift, or at least plan like a Christmas family viewing of Capital Punishment. But do go see it right now and help support Nick in his efforts. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Sam. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for being here. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. I'll be right back. Hi there. Sam Sorbo here for Nutramedics.com. I use Nutramedics products because they're all natural and they help me control my stress. So I like the stress package, but they also make great vitamins and minerals and other kinds of, I mean, their melatonin is killer. Killer. If you want a good night's sleep, get the Nutramedics melatonin. Kevin and I both love this company because they're an American company. They support our values. They even support Sorbo Studios with your purchases. So please go to Nutramedics.com for great health and wellness products like the ones that I just mentioned and many other. Nutramedics.com. Use Sorbo at checkout. And you can also go to Sorbo.Nutramedics. Nutramedics has an X. Sorbo.Nutramedics.com. For all of this, all of that great information. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Hi there, Sam Sorbo here, back for a quick visit to this incredible story that just came across my desk. There's a school that is preventing students from attending a book club event with an author who survived ISIS, sex slavery. I can't even get it out. ISIS, sex slavery. And the reason will surprise you. The largest school board in Canada has reportedly banned students from attending this book club event with Nadia Murad. She is a Nobel Peace Prize winner. She miraculously survived being kidnapped by the Islamic State as a teenager and forced into sex slavery. She was slated to participate in this book club event with students from the Toronto District School Board in February of next year, with the release that in conjunction with the release of her new book, which is called The Last Girl, My Story of Captivity and My Fight Against the Islamic State. It chronicles her story of being sold into sex slavery at the age of 14 by the Islamic terrorists. But Ellen Fisher, the superintendent of the Toronto District School Board, said the students were not allowed to attend the event. They are prohibited from attending. There will be no education for you. There shall be no learning. You may not consider alternate opinions or anything that might diverge from the state dictated information. She said students wouldn't be allowed, and she cited concerns, get this, that Murad's book would offend students and, quote, foster Islamophobia. Yeah, it's not Islamophobia if it's a real fear. Well, even if it isn't a real fear, if you have reason to fear, it's not Islamophobia. It's reasonable fear. That's like calling PTS PTSD. Post-traumatic stress is just a real thing. It's not a disorder. It is order. It makes perfect sense. And Islamophobia is not a, quote, you know, phobia. It's a real fear. All right. Well, anyway, can you believe it? The way that these people control other people, they're completely unabashed. I don't know. I think I've talked about it. There's a video that somebody put together of people speaking at a school board, and one of the school board members just cutting them off and saying, you're done. You're done. You're done. No, you're done. No, you're done. You're done. And they're suing, which they should do because America. So, all right. I'll be right back after a quick break. Stay tuned. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Hi there, Sam Sorbo here. Where can you turn for reliably wholesome, uplifting, and positive media? Go to Liftable TV. Liftable TV is the place to find truth, hope, and encouragement through live and on-demand programming from today's most trusted Christian leaders, commentators, and personalities, including yours truly, Sam Sorbo. Yes, my show is up on Liftable TV. So be part of Liftable TV. Become a member. Go to liftable.tv/Sam Sorbo. Enter Sorbo15. That'll get you 15% off your first month when you join and you start a monthly membership. Just go check it out. Go to liftable.tv/Sam Sorbo and join now. Thanks for listening. And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. Quick little snippet here about this rape victim who was forced to quit her support group after the charity that's quite woke insisted on admitting a trans woman in men's clothes because she also has a right to be there. A rape victim says she was forced to leave. This is over in Britain. It's in the United Kingdom. She was forced to leave this support group, even though it was sponsored by a local charity, after it insisted that this burly transgender woman in men's clothing, had the same right to be there as she did. Hold on. So the rape survivor, they called Sarah in the reporting, spoke up over her discomfort to Survivors Network leader when this transgender woman began attending the group sessions. She was over 6 feet tall. She had a deep voice. She wore casual trousers and a sweatshirt, had obviously no female attributes, or I should say, had no obvious female attributes, just that he said that he was a woman. And then she goes on and she said, I have no idea why she was there. So she did him the honor of affording him the female pronouns. My paranoid side makes me think they were there for voyeuristic reasons. My rational side thinks they were probably there because they needed help. Yeah, my sarcastic side thinks they were there to taunt the rape victims. That's my sardonic side, I suppose. But the idea that they are now insisting that an obviously non-female, quote-unquote, woman be allowed to attend. So what was that rape scenario like? How did that? You're supposed to be a rape survivor, I imagine, to go to this support group, right? That just makes zero sense to me. It's just, are people really that crazy? Yes, I guess they are. They're really that crazy. All right. Okay, quick break here. We'll be right back. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Hey, you want to see a great video on homeschooling and home education in general? And yeah, okay, I'm in the movie, but it's not just me. It's a bunch of other people. You'll be uplifted. You'll be entertained. And you'll get some knowledge as to what you might be embarking on as a newly minted home educator. Go to schoolhouserocked.com/Sam. That's schoolhouserocked.com/Sam.
All right.
And welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm your host, Sam Sorbo. I'm now welcoming Jeremy Tate to the program. We're going to talk about the CLT or the Classic Learning Test. This is a new resource for parents and for educators that is basically designed to compete with the SAT and the ACT, both of which have been sort of, perverted, I would say, among other things, Common Core. Yeah. Jeremy Tate, welcome to the program. And you tried to jump in there. So what were you trying to say?
Sam, thanks so much for having me. I like that word, perverted by Common Core, for sure.
Yeah. So talk to me about the Classic Learning Test. I mean, it focuses on classical education, right?
It does. Yeah. And so, you know, at the outset, it may sound like, wow, what could be more boring than talking about standardized testing, right? But, you know, standardized testing really does play this super powerful role in American education. These tests kind of dictate and drive what happens in the classroom. And most schools, especially the private schools, but also public schools, the way they're evaluated, it's all driven by College Board, right? College Board owns AP, College Board owns PSAT, SAT, all of this. And so what CLT wanted to do was have a competitor to College Board that instead of driving curriculum away from founding documents, the kind of text that informed the thinking and education of all of America's founders, we wanted to have a test that drove curriculum towards that tradition instead.
Right. And so, and the test has been around since what, 2015? Is that what I saw in my notes?
That's right. 2015. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not big on tests, and I'll tell you why. I was a very good student. I was a very accomplished student, and yet I did not test well. And so I suffer from a little bit of anxiety, I guess. And when I sat down in front of an exam, I mean, I remember an organic chemistry exam, and I literally just sat there and looked at the page for maybe 20 minutes before I even started filling everything in. Yeah. And the guy that I studied with always performed better than me on the exams, even though I was the one who was basically tutoring him. So I struggle with testing. How is the CLT different from the SAT? Because the SAT has been dumbed down, right? Safe to say?
Oh, and in a really powerful way. I mean, since 2015, even by College Board's own concordance chart comparing the new SAT to the old SAT, everybody just gets about 50 to 80 points, depending on where you do on the new SAT. So it has absolutely been dumbed down. But Sam, I want to be really sensitive to what you said. I actually identify with it. I didn't have a rock solid, amazing SAT score myself. We were born out of the conviction, not that testing is the best thing ever in education, but that these tests have a huge impact in driving curriculum. And so if there's going to be testing, which is going to be some level of testing, it's how teachers are often held accountable and we can track student progress as well. And we need to have the right kind of tests that are putting students in front of the kind of texts that, again, were foundational to America's birth.
Yes, and in front of questions that actually question them on the knowledge that they have if they've got a classical education and not on the woke ideology that in which they've been instructed, which is what they're coming out of schools with. And that's why I didn't sign my kids up, or they're young still, but the older one, I never signed him up for the SAT because, first of all, I didn't care how well he performed on the SAT. But secondly, it's geared against him because he's been classically educated. So why would I be asking him a bunch of questions about, you know, transgender, non-binary, whatever? although he probably knows all that stuff, too.
Yeah, it's a really different test. I mean, the SAT has been around for over 100 years. I mean,
But it's no longer the SAT. I mean, they've done away with most of the essay questions, if not all of them, right?
It looks nothing like the SAT that I took even in the late 90s. I mean, the analogy's gone, logic questions gone, everything that made the SAT, the only thing that has stayed the same is that it is still in English and it is and it's still called the SAT. Everything else really has changed, though.
So let me ask you this. If I were part of a cabal, say, of sort of an organization that wanted to make sure that parents were insecure enough that they felt that they needed to spend a lot of money on, say, I don't know, college, would that incentivize me, do you think, to dumb down the test to provide a reasonable impetus for parents to believe that their children should go to college?
That's an interesting question. For decades, SAT and ACT competed against each other actually by dumbing down the test, right? If they dumbed it down just a little bit year over year, they could be the SAT or the ACT could be the easier pathway to scholarships or to admissions, right? And so they were actually competing against each other by making the test easier kind of year over year. And so I think these tests have actually played a big role in the dumbing down of American education. And it is a reality. I mean, nobody likes to hear that, but collectively America is absolutely getting dumber.
Oh, absolutely getting dumber. I mean, there was that one, the eighth grade test that somebody found and they circulated that and basically virtually impossible for any even highly educated person today.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at the Harvard entrance exam from even, you know, the mid 19th century, you know, they're translating the entrance exam, translating high level Latin and Greek into English. You know, all students were expected to be able to do this. Yeah. And even I think I know the eighth grade test that you're talking about. I probably couldn't pass. And I don't think most graduates could pass either.
I struggled. I have to say I struggled with it and I've got better than an eighth grade education, but not the eighth grade education that they were offering way back when. It's sad to me. But I will say, and if you don't mind sort of taking the conversation in this direction, you know, I do a TV show called Schools Out with Sam Sorbo on Epic TV. And, you know, I posit that we are no longer in the business of education. What we're calling education is really just schooling, which is not the same thing at all, because education ought to seek mastery and a facility of thinking. And the ability to pursue knowledge, right? And instead, what we're doing is we're offering children that the knowledge is embodied in the teacher. You have to ask permission to request any information from the teacher. And when you finish school, you're done learning. There's no more learning to be had, in a sense.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that you said that. I mean, Sam, if you think about even going back thousands of years, all the way from Plato to Aristotle and through the centuries, what defined a good education really didn't change all that much. I mean, look at what Ben Franklin, Frederick Douglass, they're talking about the same thing. A good education consisted in philosophy, in logic, in grammar.
Well, it included the Bible, that's for sure.
Absolutely. The Bible was foundational, right? Classical languages. Is gone, right? Everything that previous generations thought was the meat and potatoes of a great education has been completely stripped away. So I would agree, what we're doing now would not even be recognizable as education to our founding generation.
Yeah. All right. So how do people find out about the CLT? I think I might sign my son up to take it.
Yeah, CLTexam.com is the best way. And you know, it's interesting. A lot of colleges have actually gone test optional. We've actually supported the test optional movement from day one. I think that for a lot of students, high performance students, even a test can induce anxiety for sure. That's a very real thing. But especially for homeschool parents, the CLT is used in a lot of different capacities as well. It's used by a lot of homeschool families to track academic progress. We've homeschooled for about 4 years, just sent our kids back to a brick and mortar. But the CLT then was helpful as we're watching and even able to identify, oh yeah, they're struggling a little bit in grammar. We need to do a little bit more work there. And then a lot of secondary schools are using CLT in the same capacity, not as a high stress college entrance test, but as a test to gauge where they need to do some work, where they're doing well, where they can feel encouraged, where they need to maybe do some work with the teachers as well.
So, and you're really well positioned right now because homeschooling right now is just blossoming. And the classical schooling movement is blossoming as well. So the CLT comes for various ages. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th. And I think you're right. I mean, I think CLT is part of the larger classical renewal movement. And I think with that as well, we've been able to serve the role as kind of a connector, because in some ways CLT is kind of a least common denominator. If you're, you know, Catholic classical homeschooling or classical charter school or Protestant classical homeschooling or whatever, there's a big range. It's a big umbrella. But I think doing CLT rather than, you know, the super woke college board assessments is kind of one differentiator, I think, with classical education versus modern progressive education.
And so I guess last question, and this is just because I'm curious, is Latin automatically included? Is Greek automatically included?
Not at all. In fact, my friends in very much in the hyper, you know, in the very classical space, my own kiddos are studying Latin. There is no Latin on the CLT at all. Oh. What is really different is source material, right? Instead of reading literally Bernie Sanders, which they put on the SAT 2 years ago, instead of reading Bernie Sanders, they're reading Frederick Douglass. They're reading Ben Franklin. They're reading Aristotle. They're reading Flannery O'Connor, America's...
just a bunch of racist guys.
The dead white guys, that's right.
Yeah. No, not dead white guys, because the one guy that you mentioned was black. I know that.
That's right. Yeah, but somehow still gets lumped in.
Still racist. Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't Wild even joke. Times. It's sad. Okay, so no Latin. So I imagine, you know, there's the National Latin Board or whatever, and so you can find a Latin exam. So it's really just the classical core without the language.
We do have a competitor to the National Latin Exam as well, which will be out next spring we've already developed, and a lot of schools have already taken a look at that. But that is very different from the CLT itself. Really, our main test is the CLT 8 and the CLT 10. Those two tests are really designed to compete against the PSAT, and then the CLT itself, which competes against the SAT. And a lot of colleges have gone test optional, but a lot of great colleges have not. Even schools like Hillsdale, Patrick Henry, they do weigh a test score heavily.
And do you have essay questions on the CLT?
There is an optional essay, but what we do is really cool. Instead of grading the essay at all ourselves, all we do is we capture the essay basically as a screenshot, and then a student can send that directly to the college to give them an authentic writing sample, because colleges know that when a student submits an essay, it's often been doctored up or copy edited many, many times. So this gives colleges really an authentic writing sample.
That's actually very clever, because I'm sure the testing facility has to be credited and bona fide, and so it's all sort of protected.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to it behind the scenes. We've got an amazing tech team and just a lot of really missionally driven people here. CLT employs a ton of graduates from places like Hillsdale College. And, you know, this is what we want to do. We want to be in the business of recovering this kind of education. Testing is just a lever to make that happen. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Awesome. Jeremy Tate, thanks so much for coming on the program. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Back after a quick break. Hi there, Sam Sorbo here. You know, Kevin and I have discovered a great American company that supports our traditional values and the work we are doing to rescue the culture from the lies of the left. Check out Nutramedics.com, Nutramedics.com with an X, for the great health and wellness products that they produce, like my favorite, the stress support kit. I love that, the whole kit. It helps me just maintain a nice low level of stress, because these days are quite anxiety ridden, I found. So use the Sorbo name, use Sorbo at checkout for a deep discount, and go check it out today. That's sorbo.nutramedics.com is the website. Use Sorbo at checkout and you'll get a discount on all of your purchases just in time for Christmas. Also, you know, where can you turn for reliably wholesome, uplifting, positive media? Liftable TV is a place to find truth and hope and encouragement through live and on-demand programming from today's most trusted Christian leaders, including myself, also commentators and personalities, obviously. For people of faith, seekers of truth, Liftable TV features diverse voices united by a biblical worldview, and they can help equip you to navigate the issues of our time with truth and grace. So be part of Liftable TV, become a member by going to liftable.tv/Sam Sorbo. Enter Sorbo 15. It gets you 15% off of their first month when you get the monthly membership. Also, don't forget to check out my Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H TV, Epoch TV / Sam. And you can, that's also membership, and you can see my TV show, School's Out with Sam Sorbo. I'm very proud of the work that I've been doing there. And then finally, Sherwood TV is a great place for medical information and to get help if you come down with COVID. They helped me tremendously, Mark Sherwood, Dr. Mark Sherwood. So sherwood.tv/Sam for all of his insights and great work that he's doing there. There's also the movie that's just come out, Schoolhouse Rocked, which is a great homeschool video, movie about homeschooling. You'll be uplifted. You'll be encouraged. And you can show it to your relatives if they are somewhat disdainful of you home educating your children. Go to schoolhouserocked.com/Sam and you can watch the movie there. All right. Thanks so much. I'll be right back with more. So stay tuned to the Sam Sorbo Show. Welcome back to the Sam Sorbo Show. I'm Sam Sorbo. We're going to talk quickly about Chris Cuomo, who has now been outed. He's gone, done, washed up, as they say. CNN has released him from his contract. And what's amazing is how the journalists are handling it, crying their own crocodile tears, I suppose, or not. Maybe they're not. They seem like they're just ready to eat their own. It's really interesting to me because, look, this has been going on forever. I would imagine that many of the people who are coming out now knew that it was happening when it was happening. The reason that he is being that they're turning on him now is because the new revelations that appear to show that he was involved in using his position at CNN and his position as a quote unquote journalist to protect his brother, the former governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, from the scandals, including all those lurid sexual harassment allegations. This is according to newly released testimony from New York State Attorney General's office that shows that the CNN anchor worked tirelessly with his brother's handlers to stave off bad publicity from sexual misconduct allegations. And of course, this is the problem, is if the media is willing to bury the truth, then they are no longer the media. The report adds he even leaned on media sources who dared to speak on his brother's purported philandering. So Letitia James, who's the New York's attorney general, released the transcripts last Monday from the investigation into the governor, or the former governor, I should say. And they included CNN anchor's sworn testimony to investigators in which he did admit to using his media contacts to attain information about the sexual harassment victims, the accusers, in addition to influencing the media who are covering this this story. He didn't want his brother to go down. It's fascinating because, frankly, he, of course, is attached to his brother at the hip. And they had all of those different ways that they were in cahoots on the air. That was, you know, it was so blatant. It was so obvious that it was concocted. I'm sure there's no love lost between them, but they know that they are connected because of the name, if nothing else, but certainly everything else. The funny thing is that, you know, Cuomo was insisting back in August that he never made calls about his brother's situation. He never did anything. He never lifted a finger. And of course, that's untrue. And they have the proof now. So Rolling Stone ran a critical article on Monday. Chris Cuomo caught doing something that would get any other journalist fired. Well, yeah, but they only get fired when they are caught. They only get fired when they're caught. Noah Shachtman, who is the editor-in-chief of Rolling Stone, also added on Twitter, he said, if this story is accurate, it describes a series of shocking ethical breaches, fireable offenses at any other news outlet. The Washington Post's media critic, Eric Wemple, tweeted, that should have happened months ago. He should have been, you know, let go. And then just to be clear, if anyone else on CNN's roster did this, they'd not only be fired, but blacklisted from journalism, period. I don't think that's true. I differ from all of these liberal media pundits who think that they are mightier, holier than thou. They're not. No one else would have been fired until they got found out, until it became obvious, because people don't get fired until it becomes obvious. But the fact is, it was obvious before. They just didn't want to see it. Now that she's released the documents, they can't avoid seeing it. They can't unsee it. And so now they're willing to let him go. They weren't willing to let him go. With all the stuff that he did prior to that, when he broke quarantine on, quote, COVID quarantine, while he was airing shows saying that, oh, I'm under quarantine, it's terrible. And he actually broke quarantine during that time. And there are photos. There was proof that wasn't objectionable to CNN. I love this. The New York Times columnist, Jame Coaston, went on The View and talked to Joy Behar and the ladies on The View. And she said, oh, it's a massive ethical breach. Where are your ethics coming from? I'm just questioning what ethics do you refer? There are no ethics in journalism anymore, according to these people. She called it an abuse of power, and she added, you see people talking about these accusers like they're just nuances because we saw some of the documentation, we saw some of the back and forth, and they're treating the accusers like they're, ugh, it's just a fly. Get the fly swatter, swat that one away. Because that's their attitude. There are no ethics. You can't cite ethics after having behaved the way that you've behaved all of this time, the way you treated Donald Trump, for what? What? Nothing's ever been proven. Not a single accuser has ever been proven. The way you treated Kavanaugh after that ridiculous fiasco, the way you treated Clarence Thomas, the way you continue to treat those people, with the new series, the new shows that come out. No. Behar on her high horse also agreed, with this. I mean, it's absurd, but she says, well, I understand the inclination to help your brother. Do you now? But you don't use your position in the media to help him. You help him outside the media. Are you kidding me? Help him find Jesus, maybe. Help him come to terms with what a horrible human being he is, abusing his power that way. Was there ever any doubt that Chris Cuomo would also abuse his power? She said, but you don't use your position in the media to help him. Whether he should be fired, that's for CNN President Jeff Zucker to decide. There's a lot in this story that doesn't feel right, although I do appreciate the Cuomo family very much. She's equivocating. She's like, well, I don't know. I mean, it does seem like it was a bad thing or what have you. On Tuesday, Slate actually published an article called It's Time for CNN to Can Chris Cuomo for Being Full of Crap. And even Keith Olbermann on MSNBC, he shared a report about the alleged misconduct and added, and now he has to be fired. Because that's what they do. It's the Me Too movement all over again. They'll find a scapegoat, and then it's back to business as usual. I'm just saying. All right. Thanks so much for listening. This is the Sam Sorbo Show. Take care. Oh, by the way, go watch my TV show on Epic TV. I think it's Epic TV/Sam Sorbo. Epic TV/Schools Out. It's called Schools Out with Sam Sorbo. Do watch it. Do share it with your friends. Also, great Christmas gift. Pick up a copy of Words for Warriors for your friends, even your liberal friends. They'll learn a thing or two. And before I go, I want to talk to you about the Twitter account for Merriam-Webster apparently trolled Kyle Rittenhouse. This was amazing. So it's an old tweet that they resurfaced when Kyle Rittenhouse broke down on the stand crying, Merriam-Webster tweeted the definition of crocodile tears. They reissued an old tweet. It says, the term crocodile tears, a superficial display of anguish, comes from a medieval belief that crocodiles shed tears of sadness when killing their prey. But they did it in conjunction with the Kyle Rittenhouse, and they got trolled back. But I'm just saying, get a copy of my book, Words for Warriors, because Merriam-Webster is very busy changing definitions of words. And in this case, they didn't change the definition, but they have in other cases. For instance, in 2017, they fact-checked Kellyanne Conway after she described feminism as being very anti-male and pro-abortion, which it is, but they fact-checked her. Be careful. And they just recently changed the definition of anti-vaxxer to include anybody who opposes laws that mandate vaccination is an anti-vaxxer, which is, of course, absolutely not true. You can oppose the law and still be pro-vaccine. So there's a lot of fear-mongering going on. So just remember this, folks. 2 Timothy 1:7, for God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Keep your mind sound. Keep your love flowing. This is the Sam Sorbo Show.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.